everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here in Inside the Ropes, episode number 272, if you're following along with us on the network, where we're going to talk today about tag title stuff and guys with penises cut off and lots of
your standard fare in 1998,
just,
you know.
Just your standard kind of stuff. I'm Kenny, I'm joined by Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. What even was this episode? I'm looking back on my notes, which are just, you know, drunken texts to you, and the number of times I ask what even is happening is just astounding.
There's a lot of times. But I think now more than ever, you did ask me this during your notes. You said, I really need your heat update. So that's what I'm here to do, is to update you on what happened on
Heat. Yes, I appreciate that, because WWF would do well to give me a little bit of a recap so that I know why Mankind is banging around backstage and in the ring just being crazy. I mean, he's always being crazy, but like, I genuinely had no idea what was going on, and they did not really inform me. So please regale me with what happened on Heat last night.
And the good thing is, that is a good plug, because over on Patreon, every single week, you can get me and Finn Martin reviewing Heat. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where we can update you on what happens before you check out the episode of Retro Raw. So do go over there and check that out, so we can fill you in on the gaps. So Heat on August 9th, 1998, another episode where there literally was not a minute spared of anything. It was just boom, 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 boom. Actually, a really fun episode. We opened the show with Kane, Mankind, and Paul Bearer. There's a lot of drama going on. Mankind does all the mic work. He throws down a gauntlet to The Undertaker. He has some great lines in the promo, a really good Mankind promo. At the end, he challenges Undertaker to a match in the main event of Heat. So a good tease what was going to happen. We got to see Vader and Mark Henry. They battered the absolute shit out of each other. Vader is almost press slammed by Mark Henry.
What?
Amazing. I mean, it's very sloppy, but he did almost press slam Vader. So I feel like I need to give him that and like put it out there.
I mean, that's impressive.
But then we do, of course, get 1998 refereeing, because we have to, where Vader... So Mark Henry splashes Vader continuously without covering him and gets disqualified?
What?
Yep. But
I mean, like, that's a rule, like, in Lucha, there's castigo excesivo, like, in Chikara, for instance, if you are just, like, battering someone and refusing to try to pin them, then you can get disqualified for that, but not in WWF.
Yeah, it didn't really make any sense, but Vader and Mark Henry was much better than you would think Vader and Mark Henry would be. Michael Cole tells us that The Undertaker's going to have a statement about Mankind's challenge. Michael Cole was trying to do his best Kevin Kelly reporting here. We got the Headbangers with draws in their corner against Southern Justice with Double J and Tennessee Lee in the corner. But in the end, Double J and draws get involved. It's just a big schmoz.
So is draws with the Headbangers or with LOD? Or is he just...
He's not committed yet. He's not committed. He's assessing his options, Sondra.
He's seeing multiple people. Got it.
They're all dating. You know, they've just not made a decision yet. So
fine. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So it's going to set up later on in the night when we get a continuation of that. Now, on the initial show, we did not get this on the version we watched, because, of course, it's on the network and we're not allowed fun. There was a music video promoting the Oddities using clips from the film Freaks, with the Insane Clown Posse, and basically this is the debut officially of like a video and all that for the theme tune. So, you know, not that we ever get to hear it. Then we go.
Not that you're angry about that or anything.
No, not at all. I love hearing dubbed generic music where everyone in the arena looks like they're having fun and we just are like, I mean, it's an okay theme.
It does have weird sound effects, which I appreciate.
Then we get, it was only 2.5 minutes long, but it was a very good 2.5 minutes, X-Pac against Taka Michinoku. But of course, the post-match is the best, because when DX and Kai are all brawling, Mr. Yamaguchi-san tries to run away. I did say to Finn, I'm going to give this line away, I did say that, because obviously this was on Heat, like the night before Val Venus is going to come out and reveal what's happened to him, and I really thought they missed the trick. They should have had Mr. Yamaguchi-san with like a bag, as if it has Val Venus's dick in it. That should have been the tease, right? Because he just
that
came
really
out.
Should have been the tease, to be fair.
But they didn't do that. But what they did do was give me one of my favorite moments of China in history, where DX are cleaning house with Kai and Tai in the ring. Mr. Yamaguchi-san tries to run away. At the top of the ramp, he just gets nailed in the face by China, and he takes a comedy bump where he rolls down the ramp. Mr. Yamaguchi-san,
legend.
We do get Dustin Runnels versus Bradshaw in a match that nobody needed to see. a bit more of Droz's world. Then we get Droz versus Jeff Jarrett.
What happened on Droz's world?
I can't even remember. I just kind of gave up during Droz's world because I just... Like, I was enjoying the episode and I saw Bradshaw and Dustin Runnels and it kind of put me into like a wrestling coma.
And then your soul just left your body for a moment.
And it only lasted 2 minutes and 16 seconds.
It's too long for Dustin Runnels versus Bradshaw.
It's like double the length it should be. We got Droz versus...
It shouldn't happen. It just shouldn't be a thing.
It should not happen. We should not have to endure it, Sandra. We got Droz versus Jeff Jarrett, which is actually pretty decent compared to what it should be. But in the end, Tennessee Lee tries to throw his cowboy boot in the ring to give to Jarrett, but instead Droz gets it, KOs Jarrett with it, gets the win. And then after the match, they just beat up Tennessee Lee, and that's him gone. So Tennessee Lee is gone.
Oh, so he's officially gone now?
He is gone for his continual bad attempts at managing Jeff Jarrett.
I mean, he wasn't the most effective. He was at first, he did well, but recently it's not been going so great.
It's not. And then the main
event... Is that why Jeff Jarrett has new me hair?
Yes,
tonight?
That's right. He's broken up with Tennessee Lee, so he's trying something new out.
I'm not sure it works for him, but we'll get to that.
And then for the main event, Mankind comes out for his match with The Undertaker, but during his ring entrance, Kane is suddenly in the ring, chokeslams Mankind off the apron onto an exposed concrete floor. He hits Paul Bearer, he works over Mankind, hits the tombstone on the floor, and then he gets in the ring, takes off the mask, and it's The Undertaker, and we go off there. So it's a pretty good chaotic kind of end to the show, and it really did kind of make you go, oh, I better watch Raw and see where it goes. So it did its
job. The Undertaker, A, refused to fight Mankind fairly, and B, can't stop dressing up like his brother.
I would totally cosplay as Kane if I was Kane's brother, just saying.
I mean, I would too, but I'm just saying, like, that's not very sporting of The Undertaker.
I love that you're looking for sportsmanship on these shows where people are, like, trying to cut dicks off and, like, having boiler room brawls. You're like, where's the sportsmanship?
I'm just saying, isn't he supposed to be the babyface here?
I mean, he's the least of the problems in that sense, which we will get to in this episode. But yeah, another fun...
Yeah, that is true.
Another fun episode of Heat. I would urge you to check out Finn and I talking about it on Patreon, and the episodes are also on the network if you want to follow along. But we are here to talk about the August the 10th episode of Raw is War. We see even before the intro, before you even get the, you know, WWF thing, Mankind is in the boiler room, you know, just ranting to himself and throwing things about, which this must have really made no sense to you if you didn't know what happened on Heat.
I had no idea what was going on. It was just Mankind banging around the boiler room. And I was like, why? Like, why is he so upset? It made no sense whatsoever. This is where I really could have used a last night on Heat.
Which you did get immediately after.
But they didn't really, like, do, like, a video package or whatever. They just kept referencing it, didn't they? Or
no,
did
they
have a video package?
It was in the opening. That was the opening video package.
Oh.
The opening video package was Mankind getting hit over the chair. Because the video package was Mankind getting hit over the head with a chair by The Undertaker on last week's Raw, and then Undertaker dressing as Kane and attacking him on Heat.
So that I just thought that was from when The Undertaker dressed as Kane before. I was confused.
That makes sense. But yeah, so they kind of summarize it a little bit in the opening video. We're live in Omaha, Nebraska, site of In Your House 7, where Kevin Nash's diesel took off Mad Dog Vachon's leg and tried to hit Shawn Michaels with it. You know,
good times.
We all have Omaha memories. Mankind comes out to demand the truth from Vince McMahon, who's always leveled with him. Vince kind of sheepishly comes out, cuts a promo about how he loathes people who need his help. He tells Mankind that Kane and The Undertaker are working together and they don't care about him, which brings out Kane and Paul Bearer. Paul Bearer cuts an amazing promo on Vince McMahon, where he's like, you're going to have to listen to the fat man, and da-da-da-da-da, and then Vince is like, that's not your son, that's a son of a bitch, and then tries, I'm not even joking, he tries to take Kane's mask off. He's like, you better take that mask off, and I'm going to take it off for you. And as Vince is trying to take the mask off Kane, the lights go out, they come back on, and there's no Kane, but there is Undertaker dressed as Undertaker with his about to chokeslam Vince when Mankind sacrifices himself for Vince and Paul Bearer gets decked. And Undertaker walks off in a huff and Mankind and Paul Bearer have a hug. And that's kind of the opening segment. What were your thoughts?
I mean, I was still kind of confused about what was going on, and I didn't understand why we were so, like, bothered by the Undertaker dressing as Kane. Like, I just, there's not that much drama there for me, I guess. Like, oh, is the Undertaker dressed as Kane or the Undertaker tonight? I don't know what he decided to wear. But Mankind's promo was really good. Like, when he came out and said that there's only one person that's there, that's been there for him, and I forget what he said first, but then he said, it's not you, Uncle Paul. And then he said, there's only one person that's been there for me, and that's the bottom line, or something about a bottom line. And so of course everyone's like, oh, Austin, of course. And he was his former tag team partner as Dude Love. But Mankind's like, no, it's not Steve Austin, and of course it's Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon's just such a cretin. He's like, the mere sight of the invalid and the infirm makes my stomach turn. And I was like, fuck you. And so it was pretty obviously, like, it was Kane, obviously, like, dressed as Kane this time. But I'm not really sure what the drama would have been if it was Undertaker. Like, is the drama, is he gonna start attacking? Because everyone just attacks each other anyway. I think maybe that's why I don't care who's dressed as Kane today, because they're all just gonna end up brawling regardless of what clothes they're wearing. The Undertaker's hair is pretty luxurious, and I'm kind of jealous of its volume. And that's part of how you can tell that Undertaker was like, that Kane was Kane, because his hair's like, their hair is different. So if you're really looking closely, like, you can kind of tell. But I guess if the Undertaker's hair is wet, then it wouldn't be so, like, voluminous. I don't know.
On heat, the lights were on, so it was quite obvious it was Undertaker rather than before. I don't know, the drama works for me, because I think the drama is that Mankind's trying to figure out if Kane is on his side, and I think they do a pretty good job of making sure that Kane is not there when this Undertaker stuff is going on.
But where is Kane?
Well, but that's the drama, right? Because Mankind, I think that plays into why Mankind's so frustrated, because Kane's not doing anything. Or, like, Kane's doing...
Because he's not, like, coming to save him?
Yeah, exactly. So for me, that's kind of... That's why it works. You know,
that makes Kane kind of an asshole, too.
Yeah, it does.
And the thing is, I feel like Mankind is a very sympathetic character, and I feel like Kane is a very sympathetic character. Like, I mean, Kane has been brainwashed and locked in a basement, right? And Mankind just wants to find his place in the world, and he's misguided. Like, he's doing these things for Vince McMahon, who does not care about him, and we've seen that in the past. Like, I just want Mankind to stand up for himself and stop, you know, thinking that Vince McMahon is his end-all be-all, because Vince McMahon is not good for Mankind. And it doesn't make me hate Mankind that he's aligned with Vince. It just makes me sad, and it makes me want him to get out of this abusive relationship.
I mean, I think that's the way you're supposed to feel, and that is how it's going to play out over the next few months. So I don't think that you're in, you know, not, it shouldn't be in that mindset. That is where it's kind of, that's how it's going.
Okay.
We see the Undertaker walking into a dressing room, but it's filmed really well, where, like, as the door opens, you kind of see Kane, but you don't, like, it is Kane. You definitely see that Kane is there, but you don't see it for, like, a long time. It's, like, a very split second. So, you know, JR and Lawler are just like, what is it? He's going to see Kane. So, we get another tease of that. Which obviously
I do want to just give props to teleportation in wrestling. Like, I give the Undertaker a hard time, but I appreciate the fact that he teleported.
I know how hard that is for you, Sandra.
I'm trying to say positive things about him.
And I think it does play into, and we'll talk about it later on, you know, the whole there's a lot of stories here being told in this whole, you know, the Four Corners tag team thing in the main event, because you've got DX and The Nation, who are still kind of feuding. So you've got Rock and Owen Hart and the Outlaws in there. The Outlaws used to be the tag team champions, but they lost the belts to Mankind and Kane. You've got Mankind and Kane, who are the former champions. You've got Undertaker and Kane, who've got their whole thing going on. You've got Mankind, who doesn't know who to trust. You've got Austin and Undertaker going to SummerSlam. So you've got all these different things going on. So seeing Undertaker walking into Kane's dressing room, is, I guess, plays into what are they going to do when, for the second time, they are going to be in a match together. Because the last time was Fully Loaded, right? Where we had to find out, was Undertaker going to... You just do something to Kane, or was he gonna?
Were they in cahoots?
Yeah, I was gonna bring up. We didn't hear the word cahoots on this show, so I thought we'd bring cahoots back. Sandra, I don't know if you did this because I'd put it on Twitter and told you about it, but we did the exact same thing, because when Sable comes out, we'll get to her in 1 second. But Sable comes out to introduce Luna and the Oddities, and I immediately paused it, rewinded it to when the Oddities were just announced, and then I muted the network version, opened another browser, and played the Oddities theme, and I enjoyed myself a lot more.
Yeah, no, it was good because I looked up the Oddities theme when you put the tweet out, and I agree with you. Kurgan deserves better. He deserves better music.
Well, it doesn't make any sense why Kurgan would be dancing to the dub version that we get, because why would anybody dance to that song?
Yeah, it's not really a dance-worthy song. But, I mean, Kurgan dancing. Can we just, like, appreciate Kurgan in this episode? Even you have to appreciate Kurgan in those striped trousers doing a shimmy.
Oh, no, no, I completely
the Oddities music.
I think the music is, like, 90% of what makes the Oddities fun. And it gets more that way as we go on. So I think every week I'm just going to have to... And I urge all of you as well, take the time, take the 2 minutes... To mute the network and play the other theme in a new browser, you will have a much better time with the Oddities, I promise you.
Yep. It's definitely worth it. I played it on my phone as they were entering. It's a lovely song. Because, I mean, it's on WWE.com. Like, the Oddities theme is on WWE.com. So you can find it very easily or on YouTube or whatever. And it's a great song. And Kurgan looked amazing. And I didn't like Sable's hair or outfit in this segment.
Yeah, so what was it you wanted to say about her outfit? You thought that her trousers looked like...
They look like loose bin bags. Like, they're not even skin tight. They're too bunchy, but it's that shiny material, so it just didn't look good.
We did, however, get to see Luna face Jacqueline, with Mark Meadow in Jacqueline's corner, Sable in the Oddities in Luna's corner, and Sable then, you know, Sable's supposed to be a baby face, but she just trips Jacqueline when Jacqueline hasn't done anything to her. Since they had their match and they got reversed, which really
was
Vince.
Also, Sable and Luna are just friends now.
Yeah, what I liked was Luna was defensive, which she should be. But I think the problem was Sable was trying, like, so Sable and Luna had to have this thing where they had to have a sort of look with each other that was kind of like, the past is in the past, I respect you, go have some fun. But you're asking Sable to emote about five things at one time. And she's just not
when all she can do is like a dead stare. So it doesn't work very well. I was just kind of like, why is Sable introducing the Oddities and why is Sable introducing Luna Vachon when Sable and Luna Vachon, last we knew, just hated each other, right? And so...
So Sable did introduce them last week when we didn't get to see it.
Oh, that's right. But the network cut it out, so we didn't... And I don't think we even saw the introduction because the clip on WWE.com started in the middle of the match. So we didn't even get to see the entrance or anything.
Yeah. So,
I didn't realize that she introduced them last week as well, because it just it doesn't exist anymore on the WWE network for some reason, which doesn't make any sense. But I would have liked some mention of Sable and Luna and their history, I guess, because it just seems odd that now they're just friends.
It does seem very strange. But Luna does get the win when Sable helps, and Jacqueline does the kind of, like, you know, the she gets tripped between the ropes thing, which she does very well.
It's kind of her go-to move at this point.
And then Sable gives Luna the trophy. So Luna, who's kind of the oddball and the outcast, gets to feel like she won something and got to be treasured. And that was nice.
That is nice, but, like, is the bikini trophy a championship now? Are we meant to believe that Luna was challenging Jacqueline for the trophy? Is that...
Well, I mean, Luna's still the champion as of today, and she's dead, so I don't know how we continue the lineage.
I'm just saying, like, I was just curious about the rules of the competition.
Because... I don't think it moves on. I think Luna has it, and that's the end of it. Luna just gets to retire it.
So the trophy's just not really an issue anymore after that?
Exactly. Michael...
I don't know. The whole thing was just kind of confusing. I was like, what even are we doing here? But I love the Oddities. I absolutely love the Oddities.
Yeah. They're great. Music is essential to the enjoyment of the Oddities. So again, please take our advice on this.
I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed them. I mean, I did listen to the original music when they were doing their entrance, but like at the end when they were playing the dubbed theme, I don't think it's like terrible.
But I think as we go on, like, see when we get to like November and stuff, like everybody in the arena is doing the dancing and stuff like that, and it's mm-hmm. it's going to be very strange to see that with like really generic music. So
yeah,
I just think if you can enjoy yourself more, do it. Michael Cole tells us Steve Austin isn't happy because he has to worry about what the Undertaker is doing. He isn't happy about having to defend the tag team titles tonight in the Four Corners match, but we get more about that later. We would have at this point, if we were watching Raw's War that was on, we would have got to see the Highway to Hell music video for SummerSlam, which is an excellent video. It's on YouTube. You should check it out if you get a chance. but we do not get that. Not that I'm angry, ladies and gentlemen. Not that I'm angry.
Not that you're angry about music rights at all.
Not that maybe if you can't fucking keep the rights to something, don't fucking use it. Maybe that's an idea.
Well, it's not like they were... I mean, they probably have the rights like for the DVD release and for the event, right? Like, they didn't anticipate that in 20 years or 15 years or whatever, there was going to be a WWE network and they would have to retain music. I mean, music's expensive. It's really expensive.
Are you telling me that in the year of our Lord and Savior 2018, they couldn't call the Insane Clown Posse and be like, hey, look, can we cut you a check here and just play this music?
I mean, I'm sure that they could, but the Insane Clown Posse might want more money than WWE is willing to spend. And I mean, this is the company that doesn't give us pyro anymore. So I don't think that they're as, you know, into cutting a deal with the Insane Clown Posse as they are not doing that.
Well, they should be, is all I'm saying. Especially when we have
they should be.
Especially when we're doing a weekly podcast. So then we get the Brawl for All of Draws versus Savio Vega. I, of course, I've now taken the decision that I will not watch the Brawl for All. So as soon as it starts, I skip to the end because I just can't do it again. I've had to live through it. I can't do it a second time. Draws beat Savio Vega. Do you want to read me the tweet that you had about Savio Vega?
What did I say? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I need to scroll back up to it. So I can't decide whether Savio Vega looks like someone else. Or if we just haven't seen Savio Vega in a long time and he shaved his head, so he just looks like himself, but different. And it's really bothering me. Like, I spent this entire Brawl for All just staring at him going, does he remind me of someone, or does he just remind me of Savio Vega?
Yeah, I was trying, because I was like, does he remind me of the, like, no, he does. Initially, I was like, does he remind me of the guy from Dexter? But it's not him. It doesn't remind me of him. But I
swear he looks like someone else, but... also, he might just look like Savio Vega. I just can't tell. It's weird. And it was off-putting to me. But it did make me laugh when they showed the video of Savio Vega kicking the shit out of Brakus. Remember that?
Oh, what a time to be alive.
Oh, Brakus. Good times.
We see Triple H and China arriving at the arena, but X-Pac isn't with them. Is DX falling apart?
Because who is Draws facing next? Like, Draws is going on... in the Brawl for All. That's not something that I would have expected.
I think he's going to face... I can't remember.
I don't remember. Bart Gunn's
facing,
but...
Bart Gunn's facing the Godfather.
Yeah.
So Draws will be facing... Genuinely have no idea. No idea.
Nope.
Anyway.
I'm still confused as to what the Brawl is for.
At all.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, that's just such a generic thing, right? Like, it's for it all. Is it for the trophy? Is it for the bikini trophy? Does the winner get the bikini trophy?
It just makes me think of Billy Gunn's post Mr. Ass song where it was called I Want It All. It's a terrible song. But Michael Cole interviews China. She says, you know, he wants to get her thoughts on the whole DX situation, and she takes the mic and says that she's only got two words for him: suck it, and pushes him into a car.
China's great. China's absolutely great. I love her. And yeah, she's wonderful. And pushing around Michael Cole is always pretty good.
JR and King discuss how Jeff Jarrett and Southern Justice beat up Tennessee Lee on Sunday Night Heat, which of course ends his stint in the World Wrestling Federation. Up next is LOD 2000 are supposed to face Southern Justice, but Hawks... substance abuse is up here again because Hawk... Now, I'm going to be honest, and I'm not proud of myself... when Hawk gets startled by the fireworks and falls over, I did laugh. Because he did do it in a very funny way. But, you know, I give a lot of, like, leeway to stuff from the 90s because I don't think that you have to judge everything based on 2018. But in saying that, this is so poor taste now. And, like, if there was a way to, I think they should probably just scrap this from the network. It's that bad.
It's terrible. I mean, they should be embarrassed about this period of their history. At least they should be embarrassed about this storyline in their history, because this is, I mean, you're taking a man with actual substance abuse problems and then saying, hey, act drunk on TV. It's just, it's really, really cringy. It's, I don't know, like, I didn't laugh. I just, the whole thing makes me so uncomfortable. Like, I feel physically ill watching this, and I really, really hate it. I mean, I guess the only benefit is that we didn't have to see Southern Justice wrestle. So maybe the moral of the story is drinking is good because it saves us from the Southern Justice match. But no, like I hate all of this so much.
So WWE officials refuse to let Hawk perform. So Southern Justice end up beating up Animal. Draws makes the save. But then Jeff Jarrett hits the ring with a haircut.
He has like layers now and it's shorter. And I just don't know if it works for him. It looks like the barber got a little overzealous. Like, did he go to Brutus the Barber Beefcake with the big scissors?
I mean, that should have happened. We should have had for one week only the barber shop where Brutus Beefcake cuts Jeff Jarrett's hair and gets him to talk about his problems.
Then it would be worth it.
Jeff Jarrett draws with a guitar, knocks him out, and shaves part of his head. So I think what is good about it,
like, he's so upset about his haircut that now he's inflicting haircuts on others. Is that his new thing?
I don't know, but what I think is good is that he has a bit of an edge now, which he hasn't had before. Like, he's just been Double J, folks, and that was, like, really 1993, so it's good that he's evolving.
Actually, I think Edge had that same haircut for a while.
I think he did have that. But yeah, a little bit of an edge to his character, which is good. Better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, he seems angry about Tennessee Lee being completely ineffective. So he's still with Southern Justice then?
For now, but it doesn't last long.
Okay.
I think they've got about another month together.
I just prefer that Southern Justice never wrestle.
I think that's a fair assumption. That should never happen. X-Pac arrives alone. I did love that they've... I mean, I don't know if this is the real entrance, but it's like media entrance. What?
I have no idea.
So DX all come out, which is the Outlaws, Triple H, X-Pac, and China. X-Pac cuts a promo with Triple H and said, "I'm tired of you and your bitch," and points at China. And China looks so unimpressed at X-Pac saying that to her. And I feel like...
every time X-Pac speaks, it's just uncomfortable. Like, remember when he's like, "Look at my balls," or "I'm tired of you and your bitch." Like, you can tell he's trying so hard to be edgy.
Didn't he also say at one point, we're here to rip ass?
Yep. X-Pac definitely did say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's really bad on the microphone. Like, he is a good wrestler, and I like when he wrestles, but he should maybe not speak.
I like his, like, enthusiasm and stuff, but yeah. It's you know. But anyway, so he calls Triple H a jack-off, Sandra.
And then they all call each other jack-offs for, like, an hour. I felt like it was an hour of my life. Like, at this point, it was very late at night, and I was pretty drunk, and I thought that I had reached, like, the perfect level of intoxication, right? Because I was kind of enjoying Retro Raw, other than the Hawk stuff, but I was like, you know, this is fine. Jeff Jarrett has a haircut. I have feelings about that. And then DX came out and just were like, jack-off, 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 and... I just hate them.
Luckily, it ended with a good thing because as they're saying there's going to be a DX split, China interrupts them, says we're all
tired.
Yeah,
a DX split because they were going to moon the crowd because assholes are funny.
But China then says, if MD's going to initiate the DX split, it's me. And she shows off a tremendous ass that she has.
I mean, really, this is the best way this could have ended because... China's amazing, right? I'm in love with her. And she saved us from the boys all mooning us, and we got to see her ass instead. And her ass is way better, so upgrade. And, yeah, but, I mean, the whole segment was still pretty stupid. And I like that she's just kind of like, I can't be bothered with you boys. I will show my ass. We can be done with this. But she doesn't, like, just leave her ass out like Shawn Michaels would. She's like, look, you saw it. I'm done now. I'm going to go back about my business. She's no nonsense. Love her.
She is tremendous. I think she's really good for about another year. And then she starts wrestling. And it's not good. But then in saying that, do you know what? China, as a wrestler, is better than probably 75% of the main roster women today. So, because I think it was Ben Williams had tweeted me today. And what was it he said? Hold on. He was talking about like heels and baby faces in 2018 for the women.
And, oh, yeah, and how all of the baby faces, or how all the good wrestlers are baby faces for the most part, except for, like, Ruby and Mickey.
So here's, like, the heel roster, right, of the women. And I genuinely think there's only maybe, like, two of them who are better than China. Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Mickey James, Peyton Royce, Billie Kay, Alexa Bliss, Sarah Logan, Carmella, Liv Morgan, Lana, Dana Brooke, Alicia Fox, Ruby Riott, and Tamina. Mickey James and, like...
Really? You don't think, like, Alicia Fox and... like Ruby Riott and Mickie James and even Peyton Royce.
I just said, not a chance, Peyton Royce. But yeah, I mean, I just said Mickie James. I was about to say Ruby Riott. They were the two that I was going to say. But yeah, I mean, that's it. I don't care any of the other ones. I mean, China's like wrestled guys like Chris Jericho. She's wrestled, you know, she's been in like main events and stuff. And like, she's not a great wrestler and her punch is atrocious. But at the same time, she's just a much more interesting performer. And I think part of that is because what we're watching in retro now is we're getting all this story from her, right? Where we're building her and building her and building her. And then eventually, the wrestling, even though it's not the greatest, is much easier to watch because she's a fully formed character who people really enjoy. I mean, you'd
and she's
her.
Someone that you want to see. So, I mean, I'm interested to see China wrestle because I've only seen a couple China matches and they have not been great. But yeah, I guess we'll see when we get there.
So yeah, so that was the DX split. Then we get Michael Cole interviewing Stone Cold Steve Austin. He wants to get his thoughts on what's happened so far. And then Stone Cold Steve Austin basically lures him into a shower and then turns the hose on to him.
I was very concerned during this segment that Michael Cole was going to become electrocuted because he still had his microphone on a cable and the shower turns on and that's not good.
It's not. I mean, when I was watching this, I was kind of, you know, I kind of feel in a way like, see when Michael Cole doesn't really get respect, I feel like they only can have themselves to blame because he's just a geek from like day one.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, and the thing is, I quite like Baby Michael Cole as the interviewer. He's really, I think he's stepped up his game recently. Like, he's been willing to go into some pretty, I don't know, like, potentially harmful situations, right? Like, stepping to China. Obviously, she's not going to want to be bothered by Baby Michael Cole.
Well, I think he knew that with Kevin Kelly and his intrepid reporting, he needed to step up his game or he was going to be gone.
Well, obviously. And I think that he has stepped up his game. I've just enjoyed his journalism a little bit more in recent weeks. And I think he has put himself into some of the same dangerous situations as Kevin Kelly has. And I mean, he hasn't like gone to the Undertaker's parents' grave or been in a home with a loaded gun, but you know, like he's working on it. He was in a shower with a microphone attached to a cable and could have possibly gotten electrocuted. So that's exciting.
We're about to get the next match, but before we can get to it, Jim Ross and JR, Jim Ross and JR, you know, the two commentators.
Oh, those two guys that are completely different.
JR and King are sitting there kind of going over the events and what's happening, and Bart Gunn comes to the announce table in his Attitude Era t-shirt that he, I guess, is still wearing from Heat 8 nights ago, and he decides to shout at Jim Ross and say, you know, he's tired of being disrespected for beating Steve Williams, Dr. Death in the Brawl for All, and he's going to knock somebody out tonight. And then JR stands up and just, like, basically gets sassy with Bart Gunn. It was great. And he's like, you've not got an anchor tied to your ass, go and do what you want, and, you know, beat the Godfather or knock somebody out, whatever you're going to do. And Bart Gunn says that somebody's going to get knocked out tonight. What do you make of angry Bart Gunn?
I love angry Bart Gunn. He's adorable. He's just like, I don't know, he's trying, you know, he's basically being like Dolph Ziggler when he's like, I matter, I promise, I matter. And everyone's like, you're a Bart Gunn, just settle down. But I mean, I guess he has a point because he did knock out Dr. Death Steve Williams and that was not supposed to happen. So I guess, but I don't really know how anyone is really disrespecting him. Are they disrespecting him by not talking about him? Is that what we're meant to infer?
I mean, I guess so. I feel like it's one of those things where, like, you know, obviously, this was not the plan, right? The plan was not for them to do this, but he won, so you kind of have to go with it.
And that is why having a shoot tournament is a stupid idea.
Very much so. So,
but I mean, I like the fact that Bart Gunn is becoming a thing. I mean, if plans change and he wins in the Brawl for All and, you know, has to go on and everything, they might as well do something with it. It almost seems more like the Brawl for All is becoming more of a work. Kind of, or they're trying to make it more of one. Like, it's interesting because now they're trying to make Bart Gunn a thing, and I don't know, why not have Bart Gunn be angry and get in JR's face?
Why not indeed. We go from there to the Godfather comes out with some of his ladies. They come out and then he's supposed to be facing Vader, and Vader comes out and just starts dancing, Sandra.
To his own theme. Vader's theme is not really a dancing song, but yeah, Vader just is like, hey, I'm here, I'm Vader, I'm gonna start dancing. It's the cutest thing.
Bless him and his big cotton socks. So basically, now I think the Godfather has been very clever here. I'm going to give The Godfather credit because he does not want to fight Vader, right? You would not want to fight Vader if you're a wrestler.
No.
So he's like, right, what I'll do is I will, you know, take advantage of my position. And what I loved was when he was coming out with the ladies, Jim Ross tries to explain him on commentary. Do you remember the line here that I'm going to use?
I don't remember it at all.
And Jim Ross is like, you know, he's kind of like an upscale pimp. Like, how is he upscale? How is this upscale?
He is a pimp. Like, I don't know.
Like, I love it. I mean, look, I appreciate that The Godfather, for the duration of his run, is like the nicest pimp in the world. Like, he treats his ladies well. He always gets them at harm's way if anything's going to happen. So I appreciate that about him. I appreciate the positive and safe working environment that he puts them through with them being sex workers. However, you know, upscale pimp is a stretch.
Yeah. He is still a pimp.
He is still a pimp. So Vader is then confronted with... So Godfather offers him, you can either, you know, fight me, and that's fine, we'll have a fight, or you can spend, you can get some time with my ladies. And then...
I hope the Godfather is compensating the ladies adequately. Because, I mean, he's not expecting Vader to pay for this, right?
No, I mean, I don't know how... I don't know how it works in the sex trade. I mean, do you get like a low guarantee per hour, and then you get a bonus for when you do something? I don't know how it works. He strikes me as the kind of guy that they're getting paid for it.
I would hope so. Because I'm just saying, like, it's not like Vader's like, oh, I would like to buy this woman from you for the night. It's him offering the woman. So I would really hope that he is compensating her adequately for her services.
I would hope that he's slipping them a bonus for what they're going to have to do.
I mean, it is Vader.
So Vader then gets told that he has a choice. So Vader picks Godfather to fight him. And then Godfather's like, you can have them for the night if you want. And Vader's like, okay, I'll have the hose. So Vader just chooses. And then they both... I love this in so many ways for various reasons. So first of all, they pan across the three women, right? And I'm not here to judge... I mean, I am. I'm exactly what I'm about to do. But somebody says, I can't remember if it's Godfather or one of the commentators, said, this is the finest that Omaha has to offer. And as it did, as it said that, it panned across to them, I was like, I don't know if that's true. I'm just not sure if I had a real issue with the lipstick of the woman in the middle.
See, I had an issue with, like, the overinflated lips of the one on the right.
True. I actually think the one on the left was the nicest.
Yeah. For sure.
So then two of...
She was the one with, like, the thong, like, one piece, right? With the really high cut?
I think so. But then two of them try to hold the rope open for Vader to go through the middle, and Vader just goes through his own way anyway, and does not, you know...
He, like, sort of goes around them. It was very awkward.
And then he, like, tries to, like, grab one hand to give them a hand down. So weird. I don't understand what it was. But then,
I mean, these ladies are clearly not used to a wrestling ring, first of all. And, like, getting in and out of a wrestling ring is kind of awkward if you don't know how. But, I mean, doing it in those heels, especially, like, I mean, it's a feat.
But then he, for whatever reason, decides he's going to go over and just, like, you know, talk to Bart Gunn. And then Bart Gunn just nails him with a left hand, and Vader gets knocked out like a sack of shit. And then Bart Gunn attacks the Godfather. They have a pull-apart brawl. And that's that. What do you think?
Poor Vader. I mean, he was looking forward to a lovely evening with some ladies, and he ends up getting knocked out for his trouble. I don't know, like, Vader's a low-card kind of almost comedy character at this point, isn't he? I mean, this is a far cry from, like, Killer Vader, who fought Psycho Sid.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Finn actually goes into detail in the Heat podcast, but, you know, Vader saw an opportunity to go to All Japan and make an impact, and that's why he left, and that's kind of why he did, because he had another option, he had another way to go, and he thought he could revitalize his career, and he did, so I can live in...
I mean, that's
live.
Good, like, I'm glad that he got out and, you know, was able to revitalize his career, and that it didn't end in this, like, pit of sadness that we're watching in 1998 WWF.
So we see a limo arriving, which is Val Venus and John Wayne Bobbitt. We will get to them in a second. But before that, Dustin Runnels is here to tell us that the next segment is going to contain explicit content. He's urging viewers to watch quality, wholesome programming instead, such as there's a special about reptiles in the Discovery Channel.
Is happening? He has this weird Vaseline filter, so I decided that he and Mandy Rose have deserved each other from the start.
I love that you literally have found a way to, like, when that kind of stuff's happened, you go, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. but for those not familiar with what he's trying to do here, this is basically this whole thing is a dig at, like, evangelical Christian organizations which were criticizing WWF's programming. And then at the end it says, like, I can't remember the acronym I said a couple of weeks ago. I'll try and find it.
It's EAT ME, isn't it? Like, it's Evangelicals EAT Against
Morally
Vision something.
I'll get it here. So it's Evangelists Against Television, Movies, and Entertainment. EAT ME.
Okay. Yep.
And then he says at the end, the important thing is, he is coming back. God bless you. We're led to believe it's Jesus. It is not.
Yeah, because you told me who it is.
It is Goldust.
It is Goldust. Goldust is coming back. Which is fine, I suppose. I mean,
it's better than the alternative, Sandra.
It's better than Dustin Runnels. I mean, this was less offensive and uncomfortable. Like, he's basically being, like, proto-right to censor at this point.
Yeah, essentially. Although he's a poor man, Steven Richards at this point.
Yeah, like, I mean, he is not good at it, and Right to Censor are incredible, but I can't wait till we get to Right to Censor. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same idea.
Yeah. So up next we get Val Venus being wheeled to the ring with an ice pack on his genitals by John Wayne Bobbitt and Mrs. Yamaguchi-san. So now, were you aware? Have you always been aware of who John Wayne Bobbitt is? Was it in the news and you saw it when you were younger?
No, honestly, the only reason I know who John Wayne Bobbitt is because I've heard of John Wayne Bobbitt in conjunction with Val Venus.
So I
didn't know. I mean, do you think that I was really watching the news about a man getting his penis? Like, what even happened again? I don't remember.
Okay, so basically what happened was, this is a very famous news story from 1993 where John Wayne Bobbitt was married to a woman called Lorena Bobbitt. And let me just get the exact, here we go.
Yeah, I was like, how old would I have been at that point? Like 8? There was no way my parents were letting me watch a news story about this.
So let me read to you what happened. So John Wayne Bobbitt was married to a woman called Lorena Bobbitt, and here's what happened. The incident occurred on June 23rd, 1993 in Virginia. Lorena stated in a court hearing that after coming home at night on June 23rd, 1993, her husband raped her. After her husband had gone to sleep, Lorena grabbed a knife from the kitchen, entered their bedroom, and removed her husband's penis at its base. After this, she left the apartment with the severed appendage and drove away in her car. After a while, she threw it into a field. After realizing the severity of her crime, she stopped and called 911. John's penis was found after an exhaustive search, and it was reattached in the hospital where he was treated. The operation took 9.5 hours, however, it never regained full sensation.
So, he raped her. And WWF is like, yep, let's have this guy on TV.
Sandra, Mike Tyson was the referee of WrestleMania 20.
Oh, I am fully aware. I just don't really support WWF's casual, like, use of rapists on their television program. I'm not really okay with it.
I mean, the whole thing was, when I was younger, so because obviously I didn't have the internet, right, I somehow found out who he was, right? Like, I found out he'd been a guy that had his dick cut off. And I remember when he...
Because that's all I remembered about him. I forgot the whole, like, rape situation.
But, like, when I found out who he was, we didn't have the internet to, like, find out more about it. And I was like, oh my god, he has no penis? What must that look like? So I only found it in subsequent years he had it back. But what I do like about it is that even though Lorena, you know, came to her senses and was like, right, okay, I have to kind of, like, you know, come clean here. And even though it got reattached and he had to have an operation in 9.5 hours, he never regained full sensation. And that's a punishment
good.
For his rape. So, good.
Good.
And Lorena was never... Lorena was found not guilty due to insanity causing an irresistible impulse to sexually wound John. She couldn't be held liable. Under state law, they ordered her to undergo a 45-day evaluation period at a hospital, after which she would be released. And then they got divorced.
Oh, really? They didn't stay married. I'm shocked.
But they did do a joint appearance on Oprah Winfrey in April 2009. Although, yeah, she did an appearance on Oprah Winfrey in 2009 saying she had no interest in talking to John, but then they appeared together on a show called The Insider, on CBS in May of 2009. And he, on the show, he apologized to her for the way he treated her during their marriage, and he claimed he still loved her because he continued to send her Valentine's Day cards and flowers. So, I mean, this has escalated. However, the point is, that's who John Wayne Bobbitt is. He comes out wheeling down Val Venus with Mrs. Yamaguchi-san.
And this was in 1993. Like, was he... I don't know why I'm asking you this, but, like, was he meant to still be, like, a big pop culture figure at this point in 1998, 5 years later?
No. I mean, at this... So what else did he do? In 1994, he was charged with... Sorry, there's a noise outside my room, my house. In 1994, he was charged with striking a 21-year-old exotic dancer he met in Las Vegas while on a publicity tour.
So August, he's just a terrible person.
August 31st, 94, he was convicted of battery and sentenced to 15 days in jail. And then the next thing it says is in August 1998, he appeared in the WWF Raw's War television program. Not long after this appearance, he moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, where he worked as a bartender, limo driver, mover, pizza delivery driver, and tow truck operator. He also had a stint serving at a wedding chapel as a minister of a Universal Life Church there.
The Universal Life Church is the one where you can be ordained online. Like, I'm ordained with the Universal Life Church.
He also, in 2014, was severely injured when he broke his neck in a car accident.
I mean, like, that sucks for him, but he sounds like kind of a cretin, so...
I mean, he's had a life.
Yeah. This makes me hate the segment even more. I didn't realize, like, what a terrible person he was.
I'm here to bring more joy. I mean, for me, the sort of, like, saving grace of the segment, for whatever reason, is Jerry Lawler, because he just makes, like, dick jokes at John Wayne Bobbitt, and I found it funny. You know, I don't mean to cut you short. You know, he's a terrible person, so I don't really care about him. Anyway, Val Venus is doing the whole thing. He's half the man he used to be. Pretend he's not got his dick anymore, but then it's a whole ruse. He's still here. He then tries to rip off his trousers, but he can't seem to rip them off fully.
No, they're, like, just bunched around his ankles for a while, like, or around one. Like, I don't understand how this is even a ruse. Like, Kai and Tai would know whether they cut his dick or not. Like, there would be blood involved. The penis would either be cut off or not. Like, who is he trying to fool here?
Us?
I guess? Like, just why? Why is any of this happening?
So he, you know, it's a whole ruse, whatever. But then, my favorite part was the explanation that Val Venus gave. He says on the cold cutting board he was on, there was some timely shrinkage, and his good friend John Wayne Bobbitt just happened to be there to turn off the light as Yamaguchi-san came down with his sword, helping him avoid problems.
So John Wayne Bobbitt was at Raw last week, is what we are led to believe.
Backstage.
For whatever reason. I mean, why would John Wayne Bobbitt be backstage at Raw?
Because he's friends with Val Venus.
Apparently he is. Just what even? What even is this? Like, it's such a ridiculous story that I see why some people think it's funny. I just don't like the direction that this is headed, and I really can't stand Val Venus at this point. And also, John Wayne Bobbitt is a terrible person. I mean, I guess they deserve each other.
What I will say is I think Val Venus goes much more back into the character that you liked after this. This is, like...
He better, because, well, right now, I'm very angry at him.
Yeah, this is... Because, like, when he comes in, they try and do this whole thing with him, and it just wasn't really working. So he kind of, like... Yeah, from what I remember, he kind of goes back to being quite pedestrian and just kind of sex puns again. So that's where he's going to. The last thing he does, though, which I've always just kind of been like, and you're the babyface here, is he kicks Mrs. Yamaguchi-san to the curb because she brought him too much trouble. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with him getting rid of her because he almost got his dick chopped off. But, and then he, like, I need you to explain this to me. He gives her a battery as she leaves.
Yeah.
Why?
So... Oh, did you not get what the battery was for?
No.
Oh. So he's giving her a battery so that she can use it in a vibrator. But my issue with this... Well, I have a lot of issues with this.
you only have one issue with the vibrator.
I have multiple issues with this. So, first of all, Val Venus is a cretin, right? Like, dumping her on live television that way and just being like, you know... Whatever, I'm done with you, bitch. Like, that wasn't cool. And I mean, I guess she brought him some trouble, but, like, also it's kind of both of their faults. I mean, he's the one that decided to film them having sex and show it to her husband. Like, how is he supposed to respond? I mean, everyone in this is a terrible person, right? Like, Yamaguchi-san is a terrible person for making her crawl on the ground as he's going to, like, paddle her ass. Velvenus is a terrible person for being like, hey, I'm banging your wife and I'm going to show it on video. Mrs. Yamaguchi is a terrible person for just, like, not standing up for Velvenus and not, like, I mean, she doesn't leave her husband. She's still doing what he says, but she's also sleeping with Velvenus. Like, I'm very confused about her motivations, but, like, no one in this is really a great person, but I thought it was just a dick move for Velvenus to be like, right, so we can finally be together, but nope, fuck off, bitch, you're done. Like, that's shitty. That's really shitty of him. And then he throws a battery at her, one AA battery, by the way. So it's not like she's going to be able to, like, use just one AA battery and, like, a decent vibrator. And, like, it's also a dick move to give her a battery without providing the sex toy, because good vibrators are not cheap.
I mean, you've added a whole new layer to the segment for me. Really?
No, I thought it was just super obvious that it was like, oh, you don't get my dick anymore, so you better go buy something to satisfy yourself.
See, it's also difficult for me because I'm kind of like, you know, Velvenus is now like a fat, bald, weed guy who likes conspiracy theories.
Yep.
So, I mean, probably better off with the vibrator.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the end, she won. But it's just, I don't know. The whole thing was just really demeaning to her. I felt bad.
I did think that there was mileage in John Wayne Bobbitt being Velvenus's manager.
John Wayne Bobbitt was so terrible on the microphone. Like, he had, what, like, two lines and he could barely get them out?
What, but he was like, yeah, we went to a club soda and the place got, we got a club soda and the place got shut down. What did he even mean?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't even remember what he said.
Edge is hanging out in the crowd, though, and he does this great thing where Edge is there, and they kind of zoom in on him, and as they zoom in on him, there's a kid beside Edge who has a sign, and Edge was like, if you watch it back, you don't see Edge's hand moves, but you basically see Edge snatch the sign and rip it up behind him. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Bless
Edge.
Up next is something, again, that I skipped because I watched it once before and I'm not doing it twice. Bradshaw versus Mark Meadow in the Brawl for All. Yeah, so ended up with a tiebreaker?
Yeah, it goes an extra round.
A fourth round.
Yep.
And then Bradshaw gets the win?
Yep.
Yep, so Bradshaw.
It happened. It happened. I was just upset that Bradshaw went on, because obviously I prefer Mark Miro to Bradshaw. But
I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, the whole thing was very boring. I spent this match looking up vibrators to see just how expensive the good ones are, and they're really expensive.
So if somebody was going to get, like, the kind of lowest price vibrator that is recommendable to get and is good, what are we talking here? What kind of price?
I mean, you have to spend at least, like, I would say $20-$30.
Okay, that's not bad. $30, you could, I mean,
yeah, but I mean, like, he's just giving her a battery and expecting her to spend the $30. I mean, like, that's for, you know, a lower end one, but I mean, like, some of the really, like, good ones are, like, 50, and some of them are, like, over 100.
So, Michael Cole is so cute. He thinks that Undertaker is going to give his answer to Michael Cole right before the main event. And then Undertaker, like, because, again, Undertaker sometimes talks like a human and sometimes talks like the Undertaker. And there's never really a reason why he does either.
Yeah.
But he just goes, I'll do my talking in the ring, too. Why two? Why was a two at the end of it? It's so awkward.
Because The Undertaker is terrible at speaking, is why.
He tried.
He did.
He just put two at the end, and I was like, oh, Undertaker, with your L'Oreal hair. So it's main event time. I also thought that Jim Ross was great on this show, in terms of commentary. Like, he was just like, he felt very, like, authentic in how he commentated the show. So I'm actually really looking forward to Renee Young commentating tomorrow night's show. So,
yeah, that'll be fun. I mean, I've always preferred Renee as an interviewer because I think she's so good as an interviewer. But when people hear me say that I prefer her not on commentary, it's not because I think she's bad at commentating. I think she's better than a lot of the commentators they have. I just think that she is better at her main job and she prefers it more.
I would be happy to see her go up to commentary and send Coach to the Sun and then have Charlie Caruso replace Renee.
Yeah.
Okay, so main event time.
But then we would get, like, we wouldn't have the glory of Renee Young interviewing Shinsuke Nakamura.
But I think Charlie could be the replacement.
I think she, I think Charlie does a great job too.
She could get. She gave us Blackpool after all.
Yeah, she did. I love that that's your one thing. Like,
It's just the best. So it's main event time. Vince McMahon is, of course, still determined to get the titles off of Austin and Undertaker. So it's Austin and Undertaker defending against Kane and Mankind, the Outlaws, and The Rock and Owen Hart. Rock and Owen Hart come out first. And Owen Hart next week is going to be facing Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn in a triple threat match. That should be very good.
yeah, I'm excited about that.
And they do this kind of like fun angle before the match where basically Owen Hart is supposed to be The Rock's partner, but then Ken Shamrock comes in, knocks him out with an ankle lock and just like won't let it go. We get DX and The Nation kind of fighting each other. So
Which is
then
kind of a dick move on Ken Shamrock's part, right?
it is, yeah. I guess he's still not over the whole
I mean, I guess Owen did attack him like repeatedly for no reason for a long time. So
they
there is
just can't
that.
they can't quit each other.
They can't quit each other.
I liked how JR was like, you know, like putting across, we're going to our final commercial break. Like, this is our final time going away. When we're back, we're back. You don't need to worry about it, blah, blah, blah. And then we come back and we just see D'Lo shaking his head with his belt.
He's adorable.
So D'Lo's going to be teaming with The Rock. Then we see Kane come out. Mankind is at first not with him, but is kind of behind him in the end. Then Undertaker comes out and then Austin comes out last. The pop for Austin is insane.
Oh yeah, people just love him. I mean, people were chanting for Austin. I forget what segment it was. It was something that he was not involved in at all, and the crowd was just chanting for Austin, like in the middle of the show.
Yeah, I think this
helped. It wasn't while Vince was out. It wasn't like Mankind was out or anything. It was I'm trying to remember where it was, but
just a completely different segment that didn't involve.
Yeah,
him.
Just a completely different segment.
But yeah, like I think when you, if you can leave somebody like Austin till the end, it's good for the pop as well. So it's looking good. Anyway, so they have this match. Basically, what happens is we have all the people like teaming in, sort of tagging in different people, and then whenever somebody's about to get a pinfall, they don't let them. Undertaker and Austin have quite good teamwork together, which is strange. And they are there's one bit where like Austin like tries to rile up Undertaker to come in and beat people up. One of my favorite bits is Billy Gunn. Undertaker like stops a pinfall, and then Billy Gunn just looks at Undertaker and is like, "Fucking hell." And just does not want to do anything to Undertaker. He's just not up for it. But in the end, Mankind tags in Kane. And as Undertaker, like I think he chokeslams Mankind and then clotheslines Billy Gunn over the top rope. And he turns around and Kane chokeslams the Undertaker with one chokeslam and pins him. And then Austin's like looking at Undertaker like, what the fuck are you doing? Because Undertaker sits up straight away after the three count, no selling the chokeslam. And Austin and Undertaker kind of stare at each other. And Mankind and Kane are now the champions. Are they getting on? Are they not getting on? So what did you think of the whole... There was a lot of stuff going on, with a lot of stories going on in the main event. What did you make of it?
I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on, and there was a lot of chaos, but I just found myself really unable to care about it, because I realized that I don't care at all about the tag team championships, and I think that's because WWF doesn't care about the tag team championships, and so, like, when your champions don't really even want to be champions, or like Austin anyway, the other week when he was like, I don't really want to be the tag team champion even, because I only care about this one belt, then it makes me not be very invested. And I think because the main event storyline just really isn't hitting for me. Again, I don't know what it is. I don't know why. Like, on paper, I see that they are telling a story and I should probably like it, but I just, the whole cahoots, whose side is he on thing just really doesn't hit for me. And that's kind of the crux of this tag team match. So, I mean, some of the wrestling was really fun. Some of the, you know, the chaos. I love D'Lo Brown. He's adorable. But I don't know, like, it just doesn't work for me. Like, someone threw trash in the ring at the end, and I was like, yep, that's exactly how I feel about the tag team division. And I don't know, like, I wish I liked it more. I really do, because I see that they're trying to tell stories, but it seems like I just don't like the tag team titles being involved in the main event storyline as well, because it just kind of makes them seem like second fiddle, I guess. Like, I was pleased that Kane pinned The Undertaker. That made me happy. But
see,
until you were just recapping it there, I didn't even get the whole like they're mad because The Undertaker no sold the choke slam, so are we meant to believe that he like let Kane win or something? Is that what they're trying to go for? Because none of that is coming through to me.
Well, it's funny because like I have a totally opposite response to it, because I felt like what was so good about this match was all four teams wanted the tag team titles. Like Austin and Undertaker, when it came right down to it, they were like, we want to be the champions, we do not want to lose. And I think what was clever about it was, you know, they've only been the champions for 2 weeks. They won them at Fully Loaded, which was July 26th, and they've lost them in the August 10th episode. I think it was a good storyline to have, because like if you don't have that, there's no reason for Austin and Undertaker to have to get along. Like, otherwise they would not get along. So I like that. I think Mankind and Kane are a good idea to give the titles to, because they've got their own shit going on as well. I liked that the crowd were into The Rock as well, and he was kind of playing that up, and you know, it was nice to see D'Lo getting a main event. The Outlaws,
there were a lot of Rocky Sucks chants.
The
crowd is still very like into booing The Rock, which is good.
And then the Outlaws were very over. I look at like this, for me it was like I much prefer see the tag team titles in this scenario than either of the main roster tag titles today. Like, I don't want it on a joke team that nobody really believes in. I don't want
Are the B team still champions?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't want it on a team who, you know, in theory, if they didn't have mallets, could be fun, but haven't done anything interesting in their entire run. So, for me, I would rather have it be involved. I like that it's involved within, like, three or four different stories. That kind of works for me. I think if Austin Undertaker had been the champions for... Like, so, the comparison I would give it of why this works for me as opposed to other examples of this that I don't like is that, I think it's, like, 2007... when John Cena and Shawn Michaels are co-tag team champions when they're in a main event at WrestleMania against each other, and they both come out for the main event at WrestleMania and they don't bring the tag titles.
And they're both, that's
that to
ridiculous.
Me is like really frustrating. Whereas like if you're doing a 2 week program just on TV where Austin and Undertaker are trying to like, you know, Undertaker cares about being tag team champions. Like he wouldn't even give Austin a belt for like a week.
And that's then, true. The Undertaker does care. And the Undertaker did point out to Austin that, you know, they should care about being champions because Vince McMahon doesn't want them to be. And so they should want the prize. But it doesn't seem like they really want it for the prestige. It seems like they want it just to piss off Vince McMahon. I think maybe part of the problem is that I'm just not like, I like The Rock and D'Lo just fine. But other than that, like, I'm not invested in the New Age Outlaws winning. And I would rather a tag team win the tag team championships. Like, Kane and Mankind are a tag team, so that's fine. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is.
If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Click.
But yeah, for me, it was. I thought this was, like, one of the best Raw main events they've done in months. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. And it went by quite quickly. The wrestling is pretty good. And it is sometimes heartbreaking to watch five stories take place within one match. Because if you watch Raw today... It doesn't happen at all.
Yeah, like just watch NXT. It'll be okay.
That's why I continue to watch NXT, because it gives me my modern day fix without Vince Russo putting drunk penis things into it. So, overall though, where would your thumb be for this one? Middle, down?
I think it's a thumbs down episode. I didn't really enjoy, like, there were parts of it, I guess, that I enjoyed, like, I enjoyed the oddities. I think I just enjoyed the oddities, and I think that might have been about it. Because I didn't like Brawl for All. I really, really hate everything that Valvinus is doing. I wish I were into the main event story. I'm just not. Maybe it'll help if the Undertaker's not around as much. I don't know. Like, maybe that's part of the problem, too, is I'm just... It's not a performer that I am a fan of. But... Yeah.
You're either listening to a small slump period of Sandra on watching Retro Raw, or the slow decline of Sandra watching Retro Raw as we as we maybe scrap the program. So,
but no, I mean, like, there have been times that, you know, I'm like, I really don't like this main event thing, and you're like, we're gonna have to stop doing the show, and then it comes back and was better again, right?
Yeah, like, I think that so for the next kind of like, I mean, for the rest of 1998, Austin, Mankind, Undertaker, and Kane are all players in the main event scene. Is the key? So it's
yeah,
not,
I mean. But and maybe they'll
dynamics
if the
change.
Story can stop being cahoots, then that would be great. Like, I'm just really tired of cahoots.
I'm saying nothing because it would give stuff away. I'm gonna go thumbs in the middle for this episode. I love the main event, and I love the opening promo from Mankind. But and then, you know, there's stuff that was like fun enough, like Luna and Jacqueline was fun enough, but the Brawl for All was bad. The Hawk stuff was really annoying. The Val Venus thing was just a bit blah. So overall, yeah, it just took a... I think if you don't have time to watch the full thing, I would suggest just watching the opening promo and the main event, and maybe Vader dancing and being with some ladies.
And Kurgan.
And Kurgan. And China doing the DX split. That was good. So we'll be back next week for the... Is next week the go-home for SummerSlam? No. Okay. We'll be back next week for another episode of Retro Raw. Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to say hi and do the plugs?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear our classic or retro pay-per-view reviews, I mean, you can hear classic ITR on Patreon as well, but also our retro pay-per-view reviews, and also Retro Heat with Kenny and Finn, because they're watching it, so I don't have to. Go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of bonus content going up there all the time. InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets for tickets for Pat Patterson and Edge. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interviews with people like Triple H, Daniel Bryan, James Storm. The Ricochet interview is going up tonight, did you say? So all sorts of good content there, and I think that's about it.
That is it. So Playing Us Out is the theme that you should be hearing on Retro Raw that you don't get to hear every week. It is the Oddities. They are the greatest show, apparently. So this is their theme tune, as you should hear it. I'm not even putting a minute of it in. I'm giving you the full 3.5. You deserve it.
It's an excellent song.
It's an excellent song by the Insane Clown Posse. Enjoy it. We'll be back next week with more. Bye.
Bye.
We didn't lie to you, folks. We told you we had living, breathing monstrosity. You don't think it's funny? It's sad, is it?
Everybody come.